You about ready? This is Marty Ford from the basement of Bozo's Bar and Grill in Tonsawa Station, once again coming to you on BBSRadio.com, by the way, BBSRadio.com. Internet radio, and here I am. I'm here. I'm ready. My hands are steady. Armpits a little sweaty. Going to have a big bowl of spaghetti while I'm thinking about that beautiful actress from years ago, Anna Maria Alberghetti. Yes, I can flow, and I do have some no. We're back at you here. This is our second show of You About Ready. We were away last week taking care of some family business. In the interim, I had a birthday. Well, happy birthday to me, and thank you very much, folks. And what better way to celebrate a birthday? I kid you not, this is really the way you have to do it. My wife and I spent 2 hours at Sears buying a new washing machine. We knew we were going to have to buy one because the one we have is 18 years old and needed work. So, of course, we went to Sears and went right to the Kenmore guy and spent 2 hours back and forth, not negotiating price or anything, trying to decide which one to buy. Because, as with many things in life, there's just too many choices. And it all started, I think I mentioned it last time, with that great guy of the Orange Roof Motels on the interstate highways or on the highways before the interstates were built, Howard Johnson, who gave us 28 flavors of ice cream and one flavor of food. And since then, we have 31 flavors. There's probably 150 flavors. I used to make ice cream in an ice cream store. We must have had 200 flavors, of which we always had about 30 available to the customers. Seasonal changes occurred as well. But too many choices, but we narrowed it down. And speaking of that, we just went shopping, sneaker shopping for our son. And I just challenge you to spend less than 2 hours buying a pair of sneakers. Because if they have the right color, they don't have the right size, or they don't have the right style or model for the kids to buy. It's just too many choices in this world. But here we have one choice. It's Marty Ford. It's You About Ready. It's BBS Radio. And we're ready to go. So we spent 2 hours at Sears. We bought the washing machine, I think, on a Tuesday. It was delivered Wednesday. And Wednesday afternoon, we had our first new load of freshly clean clothes. Thank goodness for that. Now, are there other ways to celebrate your birthday? Sure. While in Sears, I have hard-to-fit feet because as I age, the body parts expand, most of them anyway, and the feet are expanding with all kinds of issues and concerns. But I'm still out there playing basketball and soccer, contributing less and less each week, but the guys are kind to the old and feeble, as I mentioned, and they let me play even if I don't bring the ball. So we're in Sears, and we go into the shoe department, and there wasn't much of a selection, but my wife, hunter that she is, did manage to find one attractive sneaker. I'm saying it's all one color, and it's fine because I don't care about that. It wasn't modern. It's not the neon colors floating all around soccer and basketball and running shoes that the modern-day people wear, the younger folks, I should say, the ones who should be doing this stuff. And it came in my size and in my width. And I bought those suckers, and they were on sale, half price, which was nice for my birthday. And my wife used a Sears credit card and got another $1.84 off. So it was a great afternoon of shopping at Sears. And while we were in the mall, we had to solve the problem of my wife's printer not printing, which was resolved by buying a cable. Because somewhere in the wireless world, the computer didn't read the printer, and we needed the cable to make it work. So after spending money on a repairman to come out and not fix it, we spent half of that amount. And for $30, we got a cable. Now my wife's printer prints, and she's happy. New washing machine for the family, new printer cable for her, new sneakers for me. It was wonderful. And I played basketball that night, even scored a basket. How? I don't know. And why the guys passed me the ball? I don't know either. They're told not to do that because I'm not that good with it. I do the little things that count in the game. That's, the little things in life always count. If you want dollars, you better pick up the pennies and you better work hard for them. So I set screens, I box out, I rebound, I make a pass. If my body permits, I'll go on the floor for a loose ball. Anything to try to help the team win. Scoring is not my strong suit, never was. But I've been playing since I'm 14 years old at the playgrounds in the neighborhood, and I just had my 63rd birthday, and it was fun. And even as a bonus birthday present this past Sunday, 2 days ago, at soccer, I scored a goal. and it wasn't accidental. A guy made a pass to me, and I was in front of the goal, and my foot met the ball and made contact, and it went in. Very odd. Usually I swing and miss by lifting my head up, like in baseball, and missing the ball totally. Last week's topics included national health care and the way to raise the money to pay for national health care for all of us. And that was part of the opening show. And I just wanted to add a little sideline to that. Some people might think it's a socialistic thing. It's not any ism. I don't know what isms are. They're just words. It just makes plain old good sense to do it my way. And besides, we also have social things in our life. We have Social Security. We have social services. And if you're a member of any organization that takes advantage of big group rates like unions and organizations like that, you're part of a social world that offers reduced rates because of the amount of people in the so-called medical plan that you have. I remember one time I was at the pharmacy and I had to get some medicine for the kids, and my bill was $60. And the lady right next to me bought the same size medicine, the same prescription name, same everything. Hers was $15. Why? She was in a big plan at her husband's corporation, right? They offered health care back. This was a long time ago. And me, I was on my own, independent, paying for my own health care out of my pocket without a prescription plan. So there you go. We do have some form of social network. We have social networking. We have social marketing. We're social. We're not very social because we don't interact socially. We interact through a social medium, as I'm doing right now. I'd love to sit in a room with everybody face to face and just have a big old round table discussion. But geographically, physically, and logistically, that's probably not such a good idea or practical to do as well. Here we can reach more people and be more effective. Last week, we also talked about kids and play and how important it is for kids to play and get out of the school, get out of the house, get out of their room, get out of the basement, and put the electronics away and put all the stuff down and get out and do something. Whatever it is, riding a bike, kicking a ball, climbing a tree, skimming stones in the pond or a creek or a lake or something. Anything active, just to get out of the house and doing. We talked about a great book that I wrote. It's called G-Verb, Get Up, Get Out, Get Going. And the whole basis of the whole book is to keep active and do something. You can watch your TV. You can have some chips. You can drink a soda once in a while, but get up, get out, get going. Keep yourself moving and active. And the third thing we talked about is the overall theme of everything we'll talk about here, and that's empowerment. Convincing or persuading, motivating and leading, guiding, inspiring you to get out and do something rather than wait for something to happen or wait for somebody to give you something to become empowered. If I take you fishing and I do all the work, you can eat today. But tomorrow, I'm not here. How are you going to eat? You have to learn how to fish. You got to put the rod and reel together. You got to get your bait. You got to put the hook on. You got to put the bait on the hook. You have to cast off. You have to reel it in. You got to be patient. It's not instant gratification. You got to be patient. When you get a bite, you pull them in. You take it. You pull the fish in. You take it off the hook. You keep it ready until you're set to clean it and then prepare it to have for a meal so you can have food and sustenance for the day and hope that tomorrow brings the same, more, or better. And if you have enough, share with somebody who doesn't have anything or very little. So we talked about empowerment because you can accomplish more than you ever thought possible. More than you ever thought possible. If you get up, get out, get going, and do. Be a doer, not a talker. Talkers talk. Doers do. Whatever it is you want to do, put your mind to it. Make a plan. Get a schedule. Think for yourself. Research. Everything's available to you. Just get out and do. All right? And always have an attitude that you're never going to give up until you reach your goal. And when you reach that goal, it's like a sweet taste of honey. You want more, and you want more. And what's better than success? A little more success. A little more planning. A little more success. You're going to run into obstacles. You're going to be knocked down. You're going to be dragged around. You're going to get upset. You're going to feel lonely, depressed, whatever it is. You're going to feel those things. Stand up, be strong, and go get it, because it's out there to be gotten. So much of it isn't even pursued. There's opportunities that come by you all the time, all day, like those candies on Lucy's TV show when she's stuffing them in her mouth and her shirt and everything. They just keep flying at you, opportunities. You got to be able to be ready for when the right one comes along for you. And it's different for everybody, right? This is a new opportunity for me. I've been practicing for a long time. I don't know where, but I've always felt in my heart that this is where I belong. Talking to people, letting them know about things that can be done with a lot of hard work, a lot of sacrifice, very, 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 very little complaining and whining. Because there's no room for complaining or whining. That's what people do when they're not pursuing their dreams, goals, ambitions, and aspirations. They whine, moan, and complain, and then they start to blame. They do the finger pointing. They do the blame game. They do, oh, woe is me. Well, woe is you? Woe is you. Get off. Get up. Get out. Get going. And go do something with your life. I want to add a feature of the show. Could call it a concept. You could call it a tidbit of useless information. And you could call it the word of the day. But before I do that, I was remiss last time. I put out a brain buster, and I didn't give the answer before the end of the show. First time jitters, nerves, energy, excitement. The brain buster was, how far can you walk into the woods? And I put that out at the beginning of the show, and I told everyone I would give you the answer at the end, and I forgot. And the answer is, how far can you walk into the woods? Halfway. Because once you reach halfway, you're walking out of the woods. Right? When you start thinking logically and critically like that, very simple solutions. Answers are always right in front of your face. Life is not that difficult. We make it difficult because we think too much. Think long and think wrong. But you can only walk halfway into the woods, because once you reach the point of no return, you're walking out of the woods. This week's brain buster, if I can find it, is Bobby's mother has three children. Nickel, dime, and I'll say it again. Bobby's mother has three kids. Nickel, dime, and I'll give you the answer if I remember later on in the show. This is BBS Radio, BBS.com, BBSRadio.com. My name is Marty Ford. The name of the show is You Bout Ready. And you can reach me by email at hamp73@gmail.com. If you want to send me a note of any kind, good or bad, I'm open to criticism or affirmation. We accept it all, prefer the affirmation, but, you know, the world is not that kind sometimes. By the way, how often has anyone written a letter of appreciation or affirmation to an organization, a company, a business, a corporation? We're quick to write letters of complaint, but we're not so quick to praise somebody for doing a good job. Yes, they get paid for it. Yes, hopefully that's what they want to be doing. But every once in a while, it's good to hear from usually a stranger, because a lot of times the employee doesn't, or the manager never meets the customer who's writing the letter, unless it's a problem. And I've written many letters like that over the years, and I've gotten great results. And many of the comments are, wow, we don't get letters like this too much. I'm talking big corporations, all right? And they like to hear that they're doing a good job and their staff is providing the right customer service. Customer service and business is most important, because without customers to service, you have no business, right? I learned that a long time ago as a paperboy. My brother and I were paperboys. I might have mentioned this last time. But we learned the value of customer service. My goodness, we started in September. Right as school was starting, with the paper route, with 52 customers, I think. By Christmas, we had 74 customers, and we made $154 in Christmas tips. Unprecedented at the time, because we provided the very best customer service. Whatever the customer wanted, we did. They want the newspaper in the mailbox, that's where it went. They didn't want a rubber band around it, no rubber band. They wanted it under the doormat, that's where it went. In the door, that's where it went. Come by and collect Saturday instead of Friday, we did. whatever it took to satisfy the customer, we did. And we were rewarded at Christmas with our Christmas tips and also by the newspaper itself, who sent their manager around to give us a nice present and to speak highly of us to our parents, who we made proud. And that's what we like doing, making our parents proud of the things we did and tolerant of the things we did that they didn't like so much. So write a letter of affirmation. You know, make it a thing to do. Next time you're in a restaurant and things are good, talk to the manager. If you can find an owner, that's great too. Let them know they did a good job and that you'll be back. If you stay at a hotel or use an airline or whatever your travels take you and you receive good service, send them a note somehow. You can always, it's easy to find home addresses of their offices and get contacts in this world. Sometimes all you have to do is ask. Usually a business card is at the desk wherever you go. And they're more than willing to provide that for you. So we're up to date with everything as far as the Brain Busters and going over last week's lesson, if you will, in life. And by the way, with the shoes, the sneakers, wide width, if anybody out there wants to make a lot of money, I don't know how, but there is a way out there. You make a line of sneakers, running shoes. I know they're out there. Some companies make a few products. Some companies hardly make any at all, some of the bigger ones. But if you make a sneaker, a running shoe, a basketball shoe, whatever athletic shoe you have, for guys with wide feet, women too, I'm sorry, but people with wide feet, we need a little TLC. We need to be able to bend and twist and turn and walk comfortably. So at night when we take our shoes off, we're not in pain, rubbing our feet, soaking them, and icing them down. So anyone who wants to get on a bandwagon and make a lot of money, come up with a product of wide width footwear and you'll do fine. You can even have a specialty store. Hell, if they have 50,000 square feet of a building just for pet food and pet items, we could probably do the same for those of us who are struggling with wide width feet. All right? So there's a business opportunity there. And I wanted to introduce a segment, a feel-good segment. I just saw it in the news tonight. The news, which is pretty much horrible to watch. I don't even know why I do it. I like to watch it, I guess, so I get comfortable in my chair before Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune come on. But they did have one story amongst all the awful things going on in the world that they report that we really don't need to know. But since it's 24-hour news and they have to fill time, every once in a while they throw in a good story. And one of the good stories today was a soldier, a family, lost a soldier in the war, KIA, killed in action. And prior to him going into the service, if I remember the story right, he had a car, a vintage-type car he wanted to restore, and it was just laying at the house. And the story went out, and a local, auto shop or body shop or business that was working with cars came to the rescue and took the car, and they're restoring it to almost original condition with all the parts that are needed, and they're paying for it themselves, and they're going to give it to the family and let the sister have the car, sister of the soldier who was killed in action. Good people doing good things for someone who paid the ultimate price of sacrificing his life so that we can have the freedom that we have to sit here and do what I'm doing and what you're doing and what everybody around the world is doing in a healthy, safe environment. Not as safe as it used to be, but we're getting better. Incidentally, speaking of the military and veterans, I have a website, which is www.connectwithveterans.com. That's www.connectwithveterans.com. If you go there, you click around, it's only a couple of pages. It's basically a registry for all former and current military personnel from all branches of the service to sign up, put their information in, name, contact information, could be a phone number or an email, and where you were stationed, what branch you were in, what places you were served your country in America, overseas, whatever, what your job was, things that, and leaving a place for someone to find you. There is a $25 registration fee and a $10 annual renewal fee, but those monies go to two places. First place it goes is to help me pay for some of the cost of running the website. The second and most important place, which isn't that much money, comparatively speaking, to the amount I'm hoping to raise. The second place it's going to go is back to deserving veterans, families and soldiers and people in need. Once we find them and verify their situation, and we're going to reach out to them, whether it's a bag of groceries, a car, help with the rent, whatever it is, medical things, I don't know. It's all out there. I just want to be able to unite. And again, here's the thing. It's a social thing. Yeah, it's all military people helping military people, one-to-one. We'll go out and we'll try to do good things for those who have served their country. And I am one of them. I served in the Air Force for 4 years, and it was a great experience for me. It opened my eyes. I traveled. I lived in Asia for 3 years, and I learned language and customs, traditions, folklore, food, music, clothing, holidays, all the celebrations and observances that I could muster into my small learning area. And it was just wonderful. When you get out of your town, when you leave your neighborhood, when you get out in the world, you see that other things are out there besides the way you lived, grew up, and were raised. And it's a great thing. We would probably have less and less of the negative things going on in the world if more people did that. And it's all part of get up, get out, get going. Whether you're going from your house to the playground, from your home to another location, on travel, on business, vacation, relocation, whatever you're doing, serving in an organization that requires you to move or transfer, whether it's profit or nonprofit, living in other countries, get up. Kids who do that coming out of high school, they travel for a year, they take a gap year, they work and live in other countries and do good things. Kids in college have an opportunity, many of them, to study abroad where they learn and live amongst people other than them, right? And once you do that, you get to see and experience the world outside your world, and it is vastly huge. It's humongous, and you're never going to be able to get it all, but if you don't get out of your house, if you don't get up, get out, get going, it's never going to happen, right? So do that. Make it a point in your life, even if it's for a day, to travel into another part of your community, of your area, of your state, of your county. Take a two-hour drive away. There's a lot out there 2 hours from your home. You'll find it. One of these days, I'm going to find a pinball machine that works and I can afford, because that's my dream. One of them, anyway. Let's talk about ethics, or the lack thereof. You know, since we have so much exposure and opportunity and things in our face all day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, every day of the year, and if there were more days in the year, they'd fill that too. They got to fill stories, and, you know, a lot of people go through and say, wow, isn't that terrible what he did, what she did, what it did. Well, this kind of stuff's been going on forever, right? Longer than I've been around, and probably a lot longer than that. But, you know, scandal, fraud, and corruption is not new, right? I'm not a student of history, but I can safely say that it's not new to this era, this generation, this time in our history. It's only new because we're made aware of it so frequently, so often, and in such detail. And in fact, so much of it is out there, I don't know what to believe to be true anymore. There used to be a thing that said, well, you believe half of what you see and nothing you hear, and you'll be okay if you can make judgment that way. Well, I think that's even getting more and more reduced. The other day, they had something on TV about one of these shows that it's, you know, TV is entertainment. So they want to do stuff to make up things, to entertain us, to keep us viewed in, to buy their products that they're advertising. And you don't know what is true. What was the one of those shows on, I can't remember it, but it'll come to me. But not one, probably many, is all staged. And if you go back a little bit in history, maybe a few years, the greatest marketing, promotions, entertainment company in history, and I think this company is used in case studies in business schools throughout the country, is the WWE, World Wrestling Entertainment. Because even though you have an idea of what's going to happen and you don't know if this is right or that's right, that guy packs him in. He is the Vince McMahon is the most creative, brilliant marketing and promotions person probably in the history of the world. Better, I mean, forget P.T. Barnum. He was good in his time for what he did, and he was more local than anything else. But the WWE is international, and it's remarkable what their athletes do to their bodies, to their life, to their condition, traveling all over the world, different town every day, or nearly every day, jumping off 10-foot-high ropes, pounding their bodies into the mat, into the ropes, onto the concrete, whatever it is, and just engaging in warrior behavior. And it's their skill beyond realization. They're just the most tremendous athletes out there. And yet it's still entertainment, and they probably beat the heck out of each other and go out to dinner afterwards and say, wasn't that good? We'll do better tomorrow. And I have a soft spot in my heart for the WWE because when our kids were born a couple of decades ago, I have a Santa Claus costume, and I wanted to give back to the community because we were so blessed to have our kids after a couple of setbacks. And I wrote letters to companies, and my wife, who's a professional fundraiser, said, you're never going to get anything because you're not a nonprofit and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's hard to say no to Santa Claus, and I created a niche. I got up, I got out, I got going. I wrote a letter of solicitation. I would find a company that I thought might donate. I'd get their address, the name of their president or CEO or whoever, owner, and I wrote a letter of solicitation telling them what I wanted to do and a little bit about me and the family. And then if I got a donation, I would send a letter of acknowledgement of receipt of that donation, telling them that after Christmas, mid-January, I would send them pictures of where we went to deliver their products. And the WWE would send hundreds of t-shirts. I got hundreds of comic books and health and beauty aids product. One company, a major corporation at the time, called me and said, hey, we need a Santa Claus for our Christmas party. I said, man, you got 500 old fat guys in there who could do Santa Claus. No, we want you. No, we want you because that's what you do, and we're helping you. You can help. I said, amen. And we were in there, and I was their Santa Claus for 3 or 4 years at their annual Christmas party, where they brought in kids who didn't have families that were supportive or were able to provide them with Christmas stuff, and we did it together, and it was wonderful. But I got all kinds of donations. I books from bookstores, as I said, comic books, the T-shirts, health and beauty aids, leather fanny packs. One guy sent me from his neighborhood. I didn't have any bags, and I went to the market, and the guy, I told him a story. He said, hey, I was Santa Claus. Me and my uncle were Santa Claus, and we were younger. I'll give you whatever you want. What do you need in the market? You want to take juice boxes or chips? No, I don't want any food. We have enough of that stuff. So anyway, ethics. Two stories about ethics and ethical behavior happened to me many years ago, and I had a tough time dealing with it because I wasn't used to it. What happened was I got out of college and I had a teaching degree and certificate, and I said, well, May we got out of school, and I called around. I knew some people, and I got called for about a 2-week, what they called long-term substitute job. And it was an inner city school, in fact, the school where my dad went to high school. And over the years, it took its toll, it was run down, it was in need of repair, which they never put money into it, and the demographics socially were changing in the neighborhood. And so I went there, and I took attendance, and, you know, by 10 o'clock, the room was empty. Maybe one or two kids left out of the 18 or 20 who showed up at 8 o'clock or 8:30 for a so-called homeroom, where they got a meal, because many of the kids came to school hungry. And unfortunately, once they got their meal, they took off. Most of them, I'd say, in my room, because I was a substitute, probably 80-85% took off. And I, okay. And so I turned my attendance, you had to take attendance, and I turned my attendance in to the office, and I was told, this isn't right. I said, what do you mean? I said, it's filled out. She said, no, it's filled out wrong, the secretary. So I said, well, the kids were here at 8:30, and then by 10 o'clock they were gone, so I put them down for half a day or whatever you call it. No, they were here all day. I said, well, they weren't here all day. They left. School gets out at 2:30. They left well before halfway. She said, no, you have to sign this and show that it was in, the kids were here all day. That's how we get funded. Part of our money comes from that, even though we're a city school. We get some help. And I said, well, you know what? I don't think I can sign that. I got a license I have to take care of, and I just can't do that. And she said, well, you have to do it. I said, well, you know what? If it has to be done, you sign it and take it to your supervisor, because I can't do that. And that's the last I heard of it. I was, after the 2 weeks, I didn't get called back, and I didn't want to go back there. So with the help of the family, I researched the papers where jobs used to be advertised in abundance, and I took a job with a corporation working as a trainer. We did some research, and we were putting new systems in, and I was out there documenting the old systems and writing the new systems and training the people on how to do it. Anyway, it involved travel, and it was me and another guy, and then we had a boss. So the three of us were the team to do this job. And so after we did our first travel, my boss came to me and said, here's an expense report. Here's an expense report, and you have to fill it out. So I filled it out. You know, breakfast was $3, lunch was $5, and dinner was $8. And I took a taxi from the office to the hotel where we travel, and I filled it in, and I think the whole total was like $25 or thereabouts. He said, and my boss said, I can't sign this. You got to change it. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, breakfast was $9, lunch was $15, and dinner was $30. I said, that's not how much it cost. I have receipts. He said, don't worry about the receipts. I have receipts. And he took over, and he signed it, and he put it in. And I said, how do you do that? And his answer was, well, if we don't do this now this way, next year when they allocate money in our budget, it won't be there. Well, okay, that was cool, but I wasn't cool with it. He was. And if that's the way the system worked, you know, who am I? So I went along with it, and I gave him my expenses and my receipts and let him do it and him sign it each time we traveled, which was maybe once or twice a month to different locations. The upshot of it was, 2.5 years later, the company went out of business and they ran out of money. And I always attributed it to the fact that my nickels and dimes on the invalid expense reports contributed to the demise of the company, when in fact it didn't. They just had lousy products and no sales force. Anyway, they can hear everything you say. We have a caller calling in, and I'm trying to make contact. They can hear it.
Hello.
Hello. This is Marty. You about ready?
Hi. How are you? This is Mike in California.
Mike,
I was listening to your wonderful show.
Thank you.
I was listening to your show, and I had a question. Are either of you in contact with extraterrestrials? And if so, do you think there is any chance they might be able to help the human race in a public way, making themselves known to us through the government or whatever means, and helping us save us from ourselves, essentially?
Well, first of all, it's just me. There's not another one here. It's just me, Marty. Second of all, the extraterrestrials, I'm not educated on those. Anything is possible in today's world. It's what you believe in your heart, what kind of research you do, what you've been exposed to, where your values are in these things. And if it's something that you want to pursue, I'm sure there's plenty of information to be distributed out there. I've never really given it much thought. Do I believe that there's something better than us? Probably, because if you take a look around the world, there's a lot of harsh things going on out there. But I think we made the problems, and we are the ones who can fix them. And most of the repair, I believe, is going to come from nature. Because when you mess with nature, you're going to lose. And if you don't think nature is strong, just go to the ocean, if you're near the big body of water, and take a broom and try to sweep away. Yes.
I'm not sure if you're aware of something called the sixth mass extinction event.
But
scientists worldwide are pretty much in agreement. We are now in the throes of a sixth mass extinction event in which species are going extinct at a rate much higher than ever before in history, world history. And in fact, it's due to human presence and action. And there's no way of turning that around unless we change on a huge, massive scale. I mean, part of the problem is because there's so many humans on this planet, 7 billion.
How do you see
a solution out of that?
I don't know. I am nowhere near qualified or informed on any of this. And my strength and my goal and my passion is for people to become empowered to make the best possible world they can for themselves. And if we all do a little bit, you know, it's like you go to a room and there's 20 people and there's 20 chairs and 10 tables and a couple of other things that have to be put away. And if everybody does a little bit, the room is cleared in 5 minutes. If everybody leaves and one person has to do it, then it takes an hour, maybe longer. And that's not right. That's not doing your fair share to contribute to the well-being of a society. But that's off topic, and I appreciate your call. I'm not sure if my show is the right one to address your concerns. And if you scan through BBS Radio, I am sure there are an abundance of people who are much more well-versed and knowledgeable about the topics that you want to discuss. But I do thank you for calling. You're my first caller, and that's a great thing. And thanks for listening in California.
All right. Thank you.
All right, bye now.
Bye now.
Okay. I think we're back on the radio, and that was Mike in California. And he was talking about extraterrestrials and all kinds of things that I know nothing about. In fact, I'm writing a book about things I know nothing about, and you know what? It's endless. And I think Mike just contributed to my book another chapter. So we're going back to ethics, and I told you two stories that came rather quickly. One was in the school where I worked, where I was asked to forge documents, and the second just about 3 months later when I went into the corporate world. So it happened in a nonprofit school environment, public education, and it happened in the corporate world. So if it's going on in those small arenas, in my little world, that kind of stuff, and again, it's 30 or 40 years ago, but is that kind of stuff still going on today? I think it is. And what gives people the right to do that when it's not their money? Sometimes the loudest complainers about entitlements and giveaways and all that turn out to be the biggest thieves, right? They don't want you to have, but when they get into a position of power or influence or leverage, that's when they take advantage of a situation and not thinking, oh, heck, it's right here in front of me. How about this? This is a tough one. It's easy for me, and I hope it's easy for you. But let's just say, let me tell you something. I love the police. Without them, and I'm going to give you a little dissertation on the power of one. The power of one. You put one police officer where we are in a town close by. There's one police officer every day during the school year who is out in the middle of the street of a two-lane highway that has a turnoff at each side. And it's right at the school during opening, and I think at dismissal time too, although I'm not sure. But I pass by there during the school opening, and I'm heading west. There's an eastbound lane. There's a bypass lane on the right because there's a left turn into the school. And then there's a right turn in from the eastbound lane because the eastbound goes straight. And then there's a little cutout for a right turn. So this officer has essentially four lanes of traffic. He's got pedestrians on foot, on bicycle, walking dogs, jogging, out for a walk. Some of the grown-ups in town want to be part of the action in the morning. And he has absolute power and control. Most of the time he doesn't use a whistle. He has hand signals and gestures. And when it's inclement weather, he's dressed appropriately, and he'll have a flashlight. And he controls that intersection. Because without it, you have chaos, and you have wrecks all over the place. And he controls that traffic, and people obey, respect, slow down, stop, and follow his command. Because the downside, we know. But there's never, I've been there going through 10 years, 20 years, I think I've been driving through that intersection. Never a problem. Always. And for years it was one officer, but it doesn't matter who's out there. They're all highly skilled and trained in traffic control, among other things. And it's just wonderful how the power of one can do something. He has control. And everybody's happy, everybody's friendly, everybody's smiling, and because they know they'll be taken care of. The wait to turn or to move forward, the longest I think I've ever waited is maybe a minute 15 seconds. And I don't even think he looks at his watch. And the cars are stacked up maybe 30, 40, 50, 60 deep on the eastbound especially, because everyone wants to get into town to go to work. So the power of one. I saw it one time on the interstate in Florida, Interstate 95 in South Florida, which is a high-speed area and a lot of things going on down there. I remember years ago, they put one police car, I think it was every couple of miles. And there wasn't anybody in there. Just the car was sitting there, and as soon as people saw the car, the brakes went on. At night, you could see all the red lights illuminating because they saw the power of one. So it doesn't take that much. It just takes it done the right way. And the police have great systems in place to handle that if we let them do their job that they're supposed to be doing. But ethically, what do? You get a call. You get a call to go check out a place or something like that, and you walk in. There's no one there. They abandon the place, and it's you or you and your partner, and there's stuff there that can be taken easily, you know, and you have kids, and you have car payments, and you got this, and you got that, and everyone's struggling. What do? I would say most people are going to leave it there or take it into the office or wherever they have to take it. Yes, there's going to be a few who will stuff their pockets. And the reality is you have to sleep at night. And you can't sleep with one eye open or looking over your shoulder. And guilt is tremendous. Guilt is tremendous. If it doesn't eat your guts up today, it will in time. So ethically, what do? Remember, no one ever went wrong doing the right thing. No one ever went wrong doing the right thing. And that's great. You know, the ethics of doing the right thing. Too many folks get involved through their job or their business or their interests that lead them, because opportunity and temptation are out there for them to do the wrong thing, the unethical thing. Even when you sign a code of conduct, such as a little thing, you can't take gifts from Christmas presents, let's say, from people who use your services or you do business with, right? Well, you can't, but then you read about all the unethical things going up on the higher levels, whether it's lying, cheating, stealing, inappropriate behavior, manipulating things. I mean, the list of scandals and cheating is endless out there. Every day there's a new one. They have kids taking SAT tests for kids. They have college kids at a prime school taking classes in government, and they're cheating on their tests. We have people stealing money all over the place. We have politicians in positions of power and influence and trust violating those things. Now, I don't know if it's just because they're in those positions or that's the type of person they are, and they would do that those kinds of behaviors no matter what. But it's dangerous when they get into places of position and power and influence, because that affects us down the line, right? And I don't even, and most of them don't think they did anything wrong. Oh, I just did this. I just did that. You know, you did something that's wrong, and you got to pay the price. You got to have consequences. And why does it take forever for someone who does that stuff to be removed from office or get charges through? If it was John Q. Public on the street, they'd be taken away. But again, there's the ethical part doesn't. It has tentacles and it reaches out. So maybe the people doing all these things have stuff on those who might want to do them harm or bring them down. It's just ugly and it's nasty. It's like negative campaigning, and every politician goes into it saying, I'm not going to negatively campaign. I want to run a clean election. And sure enough, within 2 or 3 weeks, they're out there doing the kinds of things that they shouldn't be doing, because they – the other guy's doing it, so you're going to do it. Right? That's not a way to live. You got to make up your mind. You got to become empowered to stand for what you believe in. And doing the right thing is a good way to live. It helps you. It helps the people in your world. Helps society in general. Now, I am not naive enough to believe that we can live in a world that doesn't have unethical behaviors and practices, because that would be foolish. And though I am a fool, I'm not as foolish as that. I'm a fool for other things. And one of the things I'm a fool for is empowerment. And you just have to do things for yourself and make the world a better place for you. And if we all did that, boom, things will go. One of the things I wanted to talk about is simplicity to go along with empowerment. There's a lot of people having a lot of problems today with their personal weight. You know, we're somewhat of an obese society. You read stuff all the time about how and why it's happening, whether it's altered food, whether it's eating the wrong foods. It's probably just basic old simple eating too much food and too much of the wrong food. And you can be told a million different things and believe a million different things. But if you're putting more in than you're letting off in expenditure of energy, then you're going to put on weight. Many years ago, I went into service. I was about 175 coming out of high school. I wasn't tall enough for my weight, so I don't know if I was fat or not. But I went in service, and a year and a half later, I think I was up to 215, maybe 220. I was overseas. I was playing football. We had great football over there, Division III type level, and it was a great experience. I was over in the Philippines, and we had full contact, Friday Night Light football, and it was great. And what was even better was the fact many of my teammates were black guys, and we had white guys and black guys mostly. I don't think there were too many Asians or Hispanics at the time, although the Filipino people were supporters of us, and we live with them as well as other in other countries. But the camaraderie we had, the good times we had, the learning we did from each other, and the teamwork we had, not because of the military discipline, which was good, but because we were had a common ground for the love of football, for the love of the game, and we thoroughly enjoyed each other. And I think if we break it down in simple terms, we'd have and focused on the positive, healthy things that come out of race relations and so forth, and the attention wasn't given to the constant barrage of negativity out there, we'd be a better place. You know, we used to change clothes for the game in a hut, a little like tent or something. And, you know, I was one of two or maybe three guys, I think two, white guys on the defensive team, the defensive starting team. I was pretty good, you know, and so were they. And they were my best buddies, and I knew I was a friend to them. And they used to bring a bottle of Thunderbird. What's the word? Thunderbird. What's the price? 60 twice. Now, these guys were much more worldly than me. Some of them were my age, 19, 20, 21. A lot of them, not a lot, but several of them were in their late 20s. A couple guys were in their 30s, which was great. And these are the guys I'd like to find with connectwithveterans.com. So get all your military buddies out there, and people you know, and just have them sign up. You know, this is so simple a way of guys meeting, reuniting with their buddies. And a lot of them are having trouble, especially the younger ones, with post-traumatic and therapy and medicine and all this stuff. What they need is they need to be with their buddies. They need to be with the guys that they struggled, that they sacrificed, that they lived with, that they ate with, that they battled with, that they survived with. That's what they need. All the therapy and the medicine in the world ain't going to help. You guys, you know, on MASH one time, one of the characters was, I think Frank Burns was a little out of whack, as they say. And Radar took the initiative, and he called Frank Burns' mother back in the States. And he gave Frank the phone and said, "Frank, here, it's for you. Hi, Mommy." That's what Frank said, words to that effect. And you know, Radar's line was, sometimes a guy's just got to talk to his mom. Well, we got to go there, and we have to go a little further. We got to reunite these guys who were served the country and in the military, and let them just live their life with themselves and with each other and so they can get along and get away from the things that are artificial in helping them cope with the problems that they have. So anyway, they used to pass a bottle of T-Bird around the the changing area. We had little benches and all, and you know, the four or five guys, old Breeden and Young and Charlie Brown and Fish and Spencer Rowell and all my buddies on the D-line and the linebackers and Jesse Badwell at the cornerback and James Lofton, a cornerback. James from Ravenna, Ohio. I always wanted to look up James because my daughter went to college in Ohio, but, you know, it was always time to be with her, and I never – it was stupid. I could have looked them up, and I've tried to find these guys, and I found a couple, and I've spoken to several. One guy, old Fish, when I found him, 80 years old. At the time, he was 82. I was 52, or I forget when – no. Anyway, as it turned out, he was like 40 when I was 20, so I guess I can't do the math now. It's too confusing. Anyway, he's in his 80s now, and I spoke to him, and I am in contact with his son occasionally through another medium. But these guys would pass around a bottle of Bird, and it came to me. I was like seventh or eighth in along the line, and they all stopped. They all got quiet. They all looked at me, and they said, "This boy ain't drinking that wine. Ain't no way in hell this boy is down in the sip of that stuff. Not with us in it." And so I took the bottle, put a big chug up, lifted it up, turned it, swallowed a big gulp of Thunderbird. It wasn't the most pleasurable experience and taste, but who cared? It was with the guys. And it showed them the camaraderie. We became one. We developed relationships. We grew from there. Over where we were in the Philippines at the time, downtown, there was a place called The Strip with bars and restaurants and stores and all that stuff. And then about 2 miles down was a place called The Block. Well, anybody could go on The Strip. Anybody, whoever you were, race, color, creed, religion, gender, whatever it was, anybody could go there. But down on The Block was strictly where the black guys went. Well, guess who went down on The Block? That's right. Went several times. The guys took me down. My D team took me down to experience it. And all it was the same as The Strip, only it wasn't as big. You know, if The Strip was a mile long, this was a quarter mile or a half mile long. Same thing, bars, restaurants, girls, electronic stores, people selling stuff on the street, whatever it is. But I went down there, and I knew of stories. I was told, and then we heard firsthand, of some guys going down and not coming back, or coming back a little less than in 100% shape, because it was off limits, not legally or technically, but let's say spiritually, to the people who didn't weren't welcome. And I was welcome down there because I was one of the guys. And drinking that sip of wine every week, or actually, as time went on, it was more than a sip. They used to bring two bottles because more and more of the guys on the team wanted to be part of this. And it was all started by the D team, and we were great, and we had fun. And I got knocked out in the game one time. I got the wind knocked out of me. I'm laying on the ground. And old Tiny came over. Tiny Lund, 317 pounds. He put his hand in my waist, lifted my diaphragm, and I could breathe, lifted me up. He said, "You know who hit you?" I said, "Yeah, 38. We'll take care of that." And next time it was time for 38, it was on the kicking team. And old Gene Brown and a couple other guys made 38 wish he hadn't knocked me out. Actually, he knocked me out not with a football play, but I was blocking for the kicker, and he came in and threw a couple of punches in my gut and really caught me off guard. So it was a physical thing. But the guys took care of him, and he didn't play the rest of the game from the third quarter on when they finally had a chance to redeem themselves and me. So what was I talking about? Oh, we're gaining too much weight because we're eating too much and we're not doing enough of get up, get out, get going. We're sitting around too much. We're going to these big box stores and we're buying 5 pounds of potato salad. Well, we don't want to waste anything, so we eat 5 pounds of potato salad. I think these are the places that started selling all the clothes in super big sizes. I mean, can you imagine a 6X? No disrespect. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but do you realize what a 6X is in a men's shirt? If a small is, it goes like this. Small is 14, medium is 15, large is 16, extra large is 17. 18 is a 1X, 19 is a 2X, 20 is a 3X, 21 is a 4X, 22 is a 5X, 23, you got a 23 or 4 inch neck. Most people's legs are under that size, or just around that size, which is too darn big for our own good, right? And we use these, what do they call, loyalty cards at the market, which is good. You save some money if you buy smart, right? But you know what? As much as I'm pushing national health care, and we should all have it, if I'm a health care provider and I'm looking at somebody, because everything's a history at the store, they can, I'm sure, find out what you've been buying for the past 10 years. And all they're seeing is, you know, fried this and frozen that and heavy cream here and ice cream there and chips. Not a piece of broccoli or an apple or a banana or something with grains, right? Or, you know, juice or something. I don't know. They're going to say, hey, man, you ain't taking yourself. Why should we take care of you? Why should everybody else have to take care of you? Take care of yourself. Become empowered. You can do it. You don't have to be that way. No one wants to be 50, 60, 70 pounds overweight. I cannot believe that in my heart, that people want to actually settle for that. Settle for that. I just have a tough time doing it, or believing that. When you break it down, we don't all have to be photoshopped and airbrushed people that you see in magazines and all. But we certainly can be somewhat more of a healthier body weight where we can get up and do things. We can get up, get out, get going, as opposed to having to have accessories get us through the day. For the only reason is that we're carrying too much weight. We're just eating too much. We're eating too much of the wrong thing. We're eating too often. What happened? I don't care about three meals. If you're eating too often, that's good. If you're eating smaller portions and throwing in things that are somewhat healthy for you, even though they might be genetically altered or manufactured, who knows what's going on out there. You know, we could probably feed the world every day forever with what we just produce in America. But I don't know what's going on, and it's out of my realm of expertise. All I can do is what? Take care of what I'm doing, even though I'm probably, I can stand to lose 20 pounds myself or more. I can take care of myself, provide for my family, and hope everybody does it the same. But when you go to these buffets, which I don't do, I did when we were little, and then it was sickening to have all that food there and half of it thrown away and the rest just glopped down by people who shouldn't be eating that much. And it's a sensitive issue. I know it is. I'd love to talk to people one-on-one about it or in small groups. But, man, you just don't need to be that big. There's no way your body can handle it. And it's just a shame. And they're doing all kinds of things with the gastro surgeries and, you know, forget all the pills and the powders and the potions and the equipment and the memberships and the DVDs and the TV shows that where everybody looks great and probably starves himself or throws it, whatever it is. That stuff's all wasted money. How many treadmills are now clothes hangers in your room? You don't use that stuff, right? Get up, get out, get going. Here's how you do it. When I got heavy, when I was overseas, heavier than I am now, probably, hopefully, I looked in the mirror and I saw one head but two bodies. I had to buy new uniforms. And a guy I knew from another country where we were stationed together and lived together, he was working at the uniform store in this other country where we were in Japan. So I walked in and he measured me and he said, "Holy Christ, your thighs are 6 inches bigger than my waist." I said, "Oh man," that was it. I went back to the room at the barracks in the cubicle and I cried. And thank God no one was there. Everybody was working or playing cards or out doing whatever they were doing. And I was miserable. And right then and there, I made up my mind on the way to do it. I figured it out. And I'm not very smart. So you got to bear with me. I'm a simple guy. I got up the next day. I ate breakfast like a king. I had everything. Cereal, oatmeal, eggs, bacon, a roll, a sweet roll, piece of fruit, two glasses of milk. Maybe one was a chocolate milk, if I remember. And I was loaded, ready to go. That was about 6 o'clock, 6:15 in the morning. Because I lived with the cooks overseas, and these guys, I would eat early because everything was put out, and I could just eat and get to work on time. In fact, get to work early, which I liked doing. Then for lunch, 12, 12:30, I'd have a couple of burgers and fries and soup and salad or whatever they were serving. I'd load it up because we went back to work, and we got off at 6 o'clock from work. And then at 6 o'clock, came home, changed clothes, lay down for about 20 minutes, and then I went out and took a big walk. I walked for an hour. I walked till I found the gym. We had a gym over there in this base, not the football place. It was another base in another country. And I found the gym, and I lifted some weights. But the best thing I did, I found the pickup basketball game. And if you heard me last time, pickup basketball, the greatest thing in the world. Pick up anything, right? Just guys out there banging bodies, running up and down, letting off steam, controlling their weight, and having a good time away from all their worries. So I found a gym. Well, let's make a long story longer. In 3 months, I lost about 30 pounds, and I was back down to the uniforms that I wore when I arrived. Then I lost another 10 or 15 pounds, and I've pretty much been the same since with the variations, you know, because I don't like to waste food. And when the kids were little, if they didn't finish, old Papa did, but then I'd go out and play ball and try to work it off. But that stuff is cumulative. It adds up. So you can't do that. The kids don't want to finish it. Put it in a container. Have it for lunch tomorrow. Save yourself the aggravation. I forget where I was, but we're just eating too much and we're not active enough. We're too, I don't know if the word's passive, or we're too reluctant to get up, get out, and get going. Here's how you do it. You eat breakfast like a king, lunch like a queen, dinner like a pauper. Nothing at night. You want to have a glass of water, a cup of juice, an apple? Fine. A banana is good too. Some piece of fruit. Not a whole bowl, one piece. Wake up the next morning, you're hungry. You can't wait to get to breakfast. You dream about it in the shower. I can't, I'm going to eat everything. And you do. And you repeat the process. During the night, your stomach shrinks because it's feeding off what you put in it during the day, and it has less and less. So now you're losing weight. And I'd like to know one thing. If someone out there can call in, maybe like Mike in California or somebody out there, where does all this weight go? Is it in the landfills? Because I don't know if there's room for it. Is it in the ocean? You know, people losing 10, 20, 30, 100 pounds to see on TV. Where does it all go? Does it just evaporate in the air? I need to know that. Some science guy or a nutritionist or health person with degrees, certifications, and everything else, credentials, has to call in and let us know where all this weight goes. But anyway, breakfast like a king, lunch like a queen, dinner like a pauper. Large, medium, almost non-existent with a cup of tea or juice or a fruit. Then what do? You get some comfortable fitting. First, you get a physical. You go to your doctor. You tell them, this is what I want to do. What do you think? And you'll tell them, this is the way I'm going to eat. This is what I'm eating. Eating good food, not eating crap all over the place. Stuff that's going to add fat that you don't need. Eat healthier than you've done it before, which is easy to do. Go on the internet and type in healthy breakfast, and you'll have a million things to eat. Same with lunch and dinner, or if you have dinner. Get a comfortable pair of walking shoes or sneakers or whatever you call them. Nice, good fitting pair of socks, comfortable, loose-fitting shorts or sweatpants or T-shirt or a sweatshirt, depending on where you live, and take a bottle of water with you if you want, and get out and take a walk, 20, 30, 40 minutes, an hour. If it's not in your area, if you don't live in it, go to the local high school. Guarantee there's a track up there. Walk around the track. Make the time. Find the time. Excuses explain failure. Reasons define success. You can have a million and one excuses why you can't get out and take a walk today. It's raining. It's too cold. Crapola. Put on a raincoat. Put on an extra sweatshirt. Get out of the house. Get up. Get out. Get going. Take a walk. Half an hour. And you know what? After you do that once in the morning before you go to work, get up a half hour early. Get up 40 minutes early. Hell, you sleep when you're dead. You don't need it all. You get rest. You'll be energized. You'll feel good about yourself, which is the main purpose of empowerment, to feel good about ourselves. We like that. We function better. we do good for others when we feel good about ourselves, because we want them to feel as good as us. So take a walk. After a couple of days of doing that, maybe a week or so, train yourself. Take another walk, an evening walk. After Jeopardy and Wheel, you got to watch your shows. There's very little else on. Go out and take a walk, right? The game, you can watch highlights, because life is a top 10 highlight film these days, no matter what you're doing. You're not going to miss anything. Get up and take a walk. Take it again. Take two walks a day. Double up, right? It's like paying, if you have a mortgage, you pay two months at a time. You double up on your payments if the bank lets you, and you're out of the mortgage commitment. Mortgage, by the way, I think means death wish. That's why it was so long in term, 30 years or whatever it is. So eat breakfast like a king, lunch like a queen, dinner like a pauper, get some good-fitting clothes, comfortable for you. Don't worry about fashion. No one cares what you look like when you sweat. In fact, when they see you sweat, they're going to say, wow, you're really working hard. Yeah, that's right. I told you in the beginning that I'm ready and my hands are steady, but my armpits are a little sweaty, right? That's part of the action. This is a workout for me. I'll be pumped up for 2 hours after. I'm going to take a walk when I sign off the show. Why not? And then maybe have a cup of juice when I get back, right? There's so many simple things to do, and you're going to be hearing them, a lot of them, in the future, hopefully if I can continue this for whatever good reasons. A lot of simple things to do in life that makes life simple for you. Because remember, simple works best. That's why people get along with me so well. They like the simple things in life. Get up, get out, get going. Breakfast like a king, lunch like a queen, dinner like a pauper. That's basically it. You don't need anything else, but you do need to have people aware of what you're doing. People in your family, your neighbors say, listen, man, it's dark. I'm going out for a walk. If I'm not back in 20 minutes, call somebody. Take your cell phone with you. You'll get out, you'll see people, especially when it's light. Took a walk around a neighbor, a long walk the other day with my wife, because it's just she and I at home right now. So we took a nice long walk. We saw four neighbors, or not neighbors, people, they are neighbors, they live in the same town, but we haven't seen them. Their kids are out. One kid is home, but we had nice conversations, an update. We didn't have to go to a bar. We didn't have to go to a restaurant. We didn't have to go to an event. Because in reality, that's the only time you meet people is when you go to an event. That's why we have event planners, to bring us together, because we can't do it ourselves. We're not empowered to stop by a neighbor's house and say, how are you? What's going on? How's the family? How's the house? Oh, I see you painted the garage. Wonderful. Oh, you're selling that? My neighbor's looking for it. Whatever it is, you're neighborly. You're social, in person. You're not texting. You're not tweeting. You're not whatever heck it is you do out there. Emailing. You're not Skyping. You're interacting with people without interference. My daughter did a great thing with her some of her friends. There were four of them. They went out to dinner, and I don't know who it was, maybe my daughter, maybe not. They said, all right, everybody put their cell phone in the middle of the table, right next to the salt and pepper and the sweet and low and all the other things. Put them right there. First one that grabs for their phone pays the bill. Well, they ended up splitting the check four ways because no one picked up the phone, and they were all tempted. Temptation is brutal. Temptation is brutal. That's why so many people are struggling with their recovery as to what they have problems with. Because the temptation is there, and they're not empowered to know how to handle that temptation, whatever it is. I'm tempted. I'll tell you straight up. CCCs, triple C's is my downfall. Not what you're thinking. Chocolate chip cookies is my downfall. I got to walk away from them because I can't eat one. I just have to walk away, right? And temptation also goes along with disappointment. One time I was talking with a guy, and we were at some event, and we're strolling down. And there's a table of cookies, and I had my mindset on a chocolate chip cookie, and here comes disappointment right in my face. First of all, I knew I could have one cookie, and they were small, which is good, right? Just a little sweet treat. I reached down while talking to this guy, and I'm not looking at the table, and I grabbed a cookie, put it in my mouth, took a bite. Oatmeal raisin, baby. I swallowed the piece I ate and threw the other half out, right? Temptation, disappointment. When you fall into temptation, you end up disappointment. If you're struggling with recovery, If it's an obstacle you think you cannot overcome, you must be empowered. You must be empowered. You must have tools, support system, and the strength of character inside to say, hey, I don't need that. I need to get up, get out, get going. I need to become empowered. I need to eat breakfast like a king, lunch like a queen, and dinner like a pauper. Those are the things I need to do. And you know what? Half the battle is knowing not what not to do or what not, what you don't want. Example. Again, examples are good explanations. The kids were little. We'd go to a diner, a restaurant, a coffee shop, and they'd bring the kiddies menu. And it's always a battle. What do you want for lunch? What do you want? They don't know. So you play the game. And here's a kiddies menu. You want the turtle? Oh, what's the turtle? Oh, that's a hot dog. No, I don't want the turtle. You want the giraffe? What's a giraffe? Spaghetti and meat sauce. No, I don't want the giraffe. I don't want. You want the rhinoceros? What's a rhinoceros? Mac and cheese. Yeah. Well, you didn't know what the kid wanted when you walked in, but you eliminated what he didn't want, or she. What the kid didn't want, to find out what they wanted. And that's a good thing. So sometimes we have to do that in life. We know the things that we're doing that aren't healthy and good and valuable and empowering for us, and we continue to do them. Question is, why? Who are you trying to impress? Nobody. You only have to impress you. And the more success you have, the better you feel about yourself, the more impressed you're going to be with your success, the more you become empowered. Everything is linked. It's not one-dimensional. Life is not one-dimensional. It's a great thing. Become empowered. Now, the answer to this week's Brain Buster, Critical Thinking, Mind Bender, whatever you want to call it, before we sign off. And remember, if you want to contact me at BBS Radio. And you go to bbsradio.com. Click on my name, Marty Ford. The name of the show is You About Ready. You have to go down and go to a little box that says Archive. Click the archive, and I should be there. Next time, if you want to call the show, the number is 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. If you want to send me an email with any thoughts or ideas or comments or anything, the email is hamp73@gmail.com. hamp73@gmail.com. And if you want to get the word out about my website, which is for military personnel, former and current veterans, it's www.connectwithveterans.com. www.connectwithveterans.com. It's time to wind down. My feet are on the ground. I'm going to take a walk all around town. Next time, if you want to battle, I'll tell you how we do it. This is Marty Ford. You about ready? Because it's time to power up your power. The power is in you.